From the KEI Newsroom, I'm Justin Martin. Today, advice for introverts braving holiday parties. First, though, cultural diplomacy in form and practice. For the last 6 weeks, North Texas has played host to a collection of works by contemporary artists from the United Arab Emirates. Dwali Saikowtow reports Past Forward is just stopping through.
Before the tallest skyscraper in the world was built there, before the oil and gas boom, and before Ski Dubai, there was a grassroots art scene in the UAE that dates back to the 1950s.
The UAE's pioneering artists such as Abdelkader Reyes, Dr. Najat Mekki, and Abed Sarour pay homage to our traditions through their art. And they were basically role models to the young artists that we have today.
Dana Al-Marashi is an Emirati native and a cultural historian at the UAE Embassy in Washington, D.C.
The new generation of UAE artists portray the psychology of modern life. Their work and the mediums they use speak about modernity while still trying to hold on to their roots.
In the collection are black and white pinhole photographs. One is of a father and son posing in front of a rural, desolate town square. There's also a three-dimensional animated cartoon about four Muslim grandmothers and a painting by one of the country's acclaimed artists, Obaid Sarour, with its canvas of abandoned old buildings covered with green polka dots.
The polka dots are they're a local fabric design.
Curtis Sandberg manages arts and cultural programs at Meridian International Center and is co-curator.
Jalabiya cloth, it's a particular kind of fabric. He uses that as canvas, and then he's painting contemporary scenes. So he's sort of encapsulating tradition, things that matter to him and to his spirit, but then he's also, you know, painting his landscape in his home and thinking forward.
Past Forward, that's the name of this first ever traveling exhibition of Emirati art to this scale.
Ultimately, you can tell a story, and that is really the basis for cultural diplomacy. It's finding a neutral space, showing them something remarkable and thoughtful from another culture, and then creating a framework for discussion and for commentary and for learning.
Most of the UAE artworks have been on display at ArtSpace 111 in Fort Worth. Assistant Director Brooke Baumgartner stands next to a portrait of a young man holding a quail ready to feed a falcon, the UAE's national symbol. But instead of talking about the painting, she turns to a sculpture on the floor.
It's a bug. These are actually made of these old aluminum jars that you used to transport camel milk in. And so the camel milk would be filled up in these jars and you would take it home. And the legs of the bugs are actually made of the necks of these long spoons.
She herself was surprised at what contemporary Islamic art is. Many visitors to the gallery, she says, had preconceived notions of what the United Arab Emirates is.
And frankly, some of them have been not the nicest of notions. And they come in here and I think that they see that these people are far more similar to us than they are different.
There's only one more day to see this unique exhibition before it travels to Los Angeles. That's Monday at ArtSpace 111 and the World Affairs Council offices in Dallas. Dwali Saikowtow, KERI News.
Now to a little self-check. How many of these stories are actually about war?
And it appears this vet's battle to keep his flags is close to being won.
First to another book battle in the Park Cities.
Republican John Cornyn knows he has an uphill battle.
El Paso became one of the battlegrounds in the gathering war over gay marriage.
Fears of Ebola are erupting into a battle over civil rights versus public safety.
In this week's Friday Conversation, Vice President of News Rick Holter empties the media's trove of conflict cliches with a standards and practices editor for NPR.
Mark Memmott, welcome to the Friday Conversation.
Glad to be here.
As we heard there, it really does feel like we're in the middle of a war of words these days.
Yeah, I'm not going to fight you on that one. We use battle, war, all sorts of militarized language to describe all sorts of things, especially in the world of politics. We seem to always be fighting between one side and the other, and the only cliches we can come up with seem to be war-related.
What do you think it is about politics that makes that happen so much?
Well, a lot of news organizations seem to only be able to tell the story if they put it in very simple terms. And the simplest terms sometimes are that there's one side that wants A, the other side that wants B, and they're fighting over it. And they could never come to some sort of a truce, to use another term, and settle on anything. There's no compromise in there. So it's a simple way to tell a story. It can be a very effective and compelling way to tell a story, but it also can be very repetitive. And listeners, readers, they can get pretty tired of that language.
Do you think it's just a media thing?
I think it's wider than that. I think as a culture, we sort of come to be used to that language. We're certainly used to it when it comes to sports. We're very comfortable, if you will. But I have to think that there's a case to be made that, you know, we cheapen the real wars, you know, and the people who have put their lives on the line for this country or for other countries, when we use that language just so routinely, we don't even think about it.
How worried are you about this surge in militaristic language?
Well, it concerns me. Number one, I just worry that we're turning off some of the audience. But also, I mean, our job, the media's job, is to be clear, to be factual. We don't want to be boring, but we also want to present things in context. And often when we reach for the easy cliche, we're not giving the context. We're not telling the full story. And I happen to believe that an informed electorate is a good thing, and that part of our job is to inform.
I wonder if there's any upside here. We heard a clip from a KERA report about the book battles in Highland Park. Doesn't that kind of language make a story like that one kind of come alive?
Sure. I mean, a dispute over what books young kids can read and what do they need their parents' permission to read can be a pretty dry story. So you do want to bring some language to it that will get people to listen. There's probably some other ways to do it. I mean, it could be a heated dispute. I know that that's another sort of semi-cliche at least, but you might be able to ratchet down the language just a little bit and still get across the point that this is an important issue, it's one that people are excited about, and that listeners will be interested in.
Do you think this is a problem beyond the media?
If you believe in sort of educated and informed discourse and lively conversation, yes, I think people like to think that they can have intelligent conversations. And if cliches are just so common, you don't sort of get that. You don't get that sort of intellectual debate. I don't want to sound all hoity-toity here and think that we all have to sound like we're part of the Algonquian Club or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, to have a good discussion, I think we can tone down on the cliches.
So what you're saying is, give peace a chance?
Give peace a chance. Not bad, Rick. I think what I'm saying is maybe lay down your arms.
Mark Memmott, Standards and Practices Editor for NPR. Thanks for the time.
You're welcome.
Now to another tiresome facet of language for some of us. Small talk. It's the season for it, but introverts don't have to dread the holiday gathering. Self-proclaimed introvert and writer Sophia Dimbling has a fix. Make sure to come with another purpose. She talked with Think host Chris Boyd earlier this week about how this helps you avoid anxiety.
The conversation might happen as you're doing your job. You know, if you post yourself in the kitchen and make sure everybody has a drink, you end up chatting with everybody, but it's not as much of a performance. Mm-hmm. I heard from one guy who went to his class reunion and just decided he was going to be the photographer. And he said, I had a great time. I talked to everybody, but I was able to keep that one step back with the camera between me and people, and it helped him to mingle more comfortably.
Yeah, and then I guess if you're not saying anything, people think, well, it's because you're busy doing this thing, as opposed to, oh, that person just doesn't like me or something.
Doesn't like me, isn't having fun. You know, you get a lot of that. Why aren't you having fun? A lot of introverts, myself included, like watching the fun.